Hello.
No, Lindsay, you don't have to talk to him like that.
No, I do.
This isn't the Night Peddlers.
No, this is the Night Peddlers.
No, is it?
Yeah.
Are you sure? I thought we were doing another Mud Peddlers.
No.
No? We're doing another Night Peddlers?
I think it was going to be a...
Listen, all you need to know is that if you're a Night Peddler, we usually end up seducing you at the first part
of
the episode.
Yeah, we do.
But like, I just thought we were doing two Mud Peddlers today.
Oh, okay,
I'm in the process of quitting my other job.
So it's teaching tales. Oh, right, we haven't even talked about all of that for you.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. That's what I'm trying to say.
I get it. I'm sorry. I didn't understand. All right. Hi. This is The Mud Peddlers, a podcast where two nerdy ceramic artists share the behind the scenes of their worlds of clay. We are your hosts, Lindsay M. Dillon.
And I am Dante of Earth Nation.
All right. So this week on The Mud Peddlers, we're doing a teaching tales update.
Yeah, this one is going to be more open, I will say. Should we just tell them right now?
Yeah.
I quit my other job.
Hey!
So I did a YouTube episode on this, actually,
Okay. Where
I said I quit my job and I explained it in depth.
Mm-hmm.
And the long and short of it is that, and I'll talk about finances just right now, right?
Yeah. Also, because if you're a Night Peddler, you already have heard at least a little bit of this conversation.
What are you trying to seduce
them for? Why? Shh, Dante, let me finish. But we're going into it more. Okay, I'm sorry. Carry on.
You're nasty. So, long story short, my regular 9-to-5, so the way it really started is that I worked five to six days a week, and then I had one day off for, like, my daughter, YouTube editing, doing the store, making pottery, XYZ, you know, like, all the other things that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, it's too much. So I start working 5 days a week, and then they raise the premiums on our health insurance that we get through our job.
Mm-hmm.
By a lot. It was almost like double, right? And so they were taking like over $100 per paycheck.
Yeah.
One of my buddies says, hey, you should probably just get on Covered California. They take a percentage. I think it's either Covered California or Medicaid, one of the two. It's the government health insurance.
Yeah, Medicaid.
And you pay like a percentage of what you make. And so it's like $20 a month for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a family and I have a child. So
yeah.
They give me a little bit of a break. And he was like, you could probably not work one extra day every single week and still be making more money because you're not paying the health insurance. And I was like, damn, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
So I took that day off. And then I used that day to have extra income by teaching at IMCO, the industrial mineral company. And then I was making extra money. And then somebody poached me from IMCO months later. Like, come teach over here at this other place, which I won't say. But if you listen to the Night Peddlers, you probably already know what it is.
Actually, I'm pretty sure if they listen to the earlier episodes of the Mud Peddlers, I don't know. I'm pretty sure we've already talked about it.
Yeah. Right. And somebody poached me and they're like, come work over here. And it is a facility, right? Mm. It seems to be a place in which people who are more well off than the average person. And I think when you say this to them,
It's a high-end retirement.
It's beautiful. I wish everybody could live in this place. Lindsay there, and she was like, damn.
Beautiful.
The crazy thing is I said this in class. I was like, yeah, you guys seem to be well off. And they're like, we're not rich. And I was like, right, but you're not poor is the issue.
Mm.
Like, none of you are low class here. You know what I mean? And they're like, oh, okay. Anyway, to go back to the original thing. And so I started doing the math, and they told me how much they're going to pay me. And I thought to myself, like, this could just replace my 9-to-5 job.
Mm-hmm. And for some context, in case you are a new listener and you don't know what Dante's quote-unquote 9-to-5 job was, it was...
I was a chef slash cook at a relatively popular place in Sacramento.
Yeah.
And I liked my environment. The boss was nice. We had problems like any other place does. But like, you know, I was like the second in charge of the kitchen. It was great. I ordered most of the food. And, you know, after a while, it just turned out to be so much work that it wasn't worth the amount of money they were giving me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted more time with my daughter, and I wanted more time to spend. Like, I wanted to be more family-oriented.
Yeah.
And I also wanted more time to work on my expression of myself artistically and to sell my work and make more content. Because it's getting to a point where it's becoming, like, a career job at this point.
Yeah.
And so this place hired me, and they... To be frank with you, the amount of money I got from my paychecks every 2 weeks at my 9-to-5 cooking job were like in between, I want to say, $700 and $900 every 2 weeks.
Mm.
Right? But this place is like, no, we pay you we bottom out at a certain percentage, or a certain amount, and then we add on for every student that you get, because the students pay for being in class every month. So the way they pay me is that essentially they pay me like $80 every class. I have two classes a day, 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. So technically speaking, every week I have 4 classes. And every day is 2 classes, mm-hmm. right? So I only really teach 4 classes a week. Mm-hmm. And I'm only there for 2 days out of the week.
Yes.
They pay me $80 for every class, no matter how many students are there. After the 4th student, they pay me $10 more per student per class. Mm-hmm. So one of my classes has 15 students in it. So for that 3 hours of work, because a class is only 3 hours, it's like $190.
Hell yeah.
Right? And then I have another class after that, which usually has around the same number of students. Mm-hmm. And I do this 4 times a week. All of this together makes over a G usually. Mm-hmm. And the previous teacher who I met with, had lunch with, great guy named Jim, he was like, yeah, in the high times, it's like 3 Gs. Oh my God. Every month at least. In the high times, and the low times, it's like 2+.
Yeah.
Jeez. And I was like, that automatically makes more than my 9-to-5 job mm-hmm. with 2 extra days off
yeah.
for family and content creation time.
Yeah. I love that you consider a day off as still content creation
time. It is. I truly don't have days off.
Yeah.
Like, I'm cleaning the house. Every parent that I ever talked to before having my kid is like, you don't really get days off. You just have more relaxing work than other work.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of true. But those people usually have side jobs and then their parents. And I have a bit more going on. I'm not trying to.
Yeah, no. I mean, you have a full-time plus job.
Yeah, like, I have like 3 jobs, essentially.
Yeah.
People are like, video editing is not a job. And I'm like, then you get to be my video editor now. They're like, no. And then you try and teach them. And they're like, this is a lot of things to know. And I'm like, yeah, it's almost like you're lying to yourself. But like, you know, I make my own glazes. I'm part of the glazy community. That's not really a job. And then my old social media manager, I don't consider that a job, but it is. There is a job form for that. And then I have to create the stuff. I have to know the stuff in the first place. I have to make it food safe. And then I have to make sure that my glazes are food safe, develop new glazes. And then I have to like kill my own stuff. Usually people have kill masters in the school that their entire job is to kill student stuff. I do my own stuff on top of my student stuff now. And then I also have a child. And then I had a 9-to-5 job. And then I had YouTube content creation on top of that. Like, mm-hmm. I had a bunch of stuff going on. There's probably one more thing I'm just forgetting.
Photography, shipping, workout, filing taxes.
Yeah, the
just in general being
a... God forbid I have times for my friends and to go to the gym and slap some cakes. Like, God forbid, right? I just didn't have the time for it. I took on too much. And so I finally told my boss, like, look, this new place pays me way more for what I like doing. And I'm mm-hmm. pretty good at. And I've been doing it for a long time on YouTube and in real life to, like, do the thing I naturally do.
Yeah.
Less work, more money. I'm out. I'm mm-hmm. leaving. And he didn't like it too much.
Yeah, of course
but
not.
But he understood. Me and him are pretty good friends. So mm-hmm. he was kind of like, I get it. People come and people go.
Yeah.
You know, we hugged it out. And
oh, that's good.
I told him, you can have me work 1 day a week on the hardest day. Replacing somebody on a Sunday morning is very difficult at my job.
Yeah.
It takes
years of training. That's for a limited time though, right?
Yeah, I told him, you need to be looking for a new guy. You can't be doing this for like, I'm not going to stay on a Sunday morning for like 3 months.
Okay, yeah.
Just because it's hard to replace me. Like, after a while, I'm going to have to pull the cord.
Yeah.
Right?
So you're essentially giving, like, an extended notice.
I said, I'll give you a month notice. After St. Patrick's Day, I'm gone. I'm not coming in Friday, Saturdays anymore. I looked at the schedule last week, and it still has me on after St. Patrick's Day. And I told all the managers, I was like, I'm just letting you know I'm not showing up for those days.
Yeah.
And you no longer have a punishment mechanic for me.
Yeah.
And one of the people know me pretty well, so he knows how I use the term punishment mechanic. Mm-hmm, and he's like, yeah, it's not like we can fire you now, huh? And I was like, no, you can't.
You
know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, that's fair. I was like, I'm just late. They scheduled me anyway. I want to be real honest with you. And I'm letting you know because I think I'm being nice about it. I'm not showing up. So you have the opportunity to replace me.
Yeah.
Which I know is difficult in the first place. But it's not happening.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to create YouTube videos and work at a different job.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, that's fair. But this place is great. Has a gym. You saw it.
I did.
Yeah, it has a gym. Has like 2 hot pools, 2 saunas.
So pretty.
It's very, it looks like heaven. It does. To me, at least. Mm-hmm. It looks like we're pearly gates. You know, it's at least like 3 miles deep.
Yeah.
There's 2 hubs.
What I really enjoyed about it is like, because of the just life situation of myself, what I've seen family and friends go through, and what I also know that most of people who don't have a lot of money go through in their life.
Yeah.
There was a part of me, like I, in general, and I admit that I have this, but I have like kind of a chip on my shoulder about folks who have like a lot of money.
Yeah.
Mostly because I'm jealous, and also because I feel like our society should be structured in a way to make it so that the wage and the like the wealth gap should not be as big as it is, because it's also gotten a lot worse over the last, you know, several decades.
Yeah.
But so there was this part of me that was like,
I walked into Sun City kind of like, everybody here has so much money and I'm angry and is remember, you know, but then, but I mean, but also, I mean, I was really curious to see, you know, the whole facilities. And then of course I get there, like everyone's so nice.
They're very nice.
Super, super nice.
The
everyone
generation
in your,
nice.
Everyone in your, I mean, everyone in your classes are, you know, everyone was so welcoming.
They're still clay people.
Yeah,
they still have that vibe about them.
Yeah, no. And so it was, I guess where I bring this up is because it's a good reminder for myself that like, when it's a good reminder not to be in an echo chamber, like, yes,
100%.
Just because everybody there, you know, is really nice, like, it doesn't mean that wealth inequality is not a really big problem in this country.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't negate all those things, but it's a good reminder to see the humanity in people.
100%.
And so I'm really glad for that, because it was a good chance for me to check my own, like,
yeah, there's too much polarization, especially every 4 years in America. And it's just like, if you just sat down and talked to someone like a normal person without being super polarized politically, if you actively don't make, and I'm not saying this is you.
Oh, sure.
But
sure.
I'm saying, like, if you actively don't make half of your personality about your political beliefs, constantly interjecting them into every conversation, you would probably get along with most people unless something's truly wrong with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless something's, like, actually f***ed in their head. But most of the time, most of the people that are my students are not my political alignment, and they're good people. You know?
Yeah,
Granted, there's a scale, but...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I think...
There's exceptions.
I think the thing that makes it difficult, and again, here I'm not talking about your students, I'm talking, like, broadly, because I think... And again, we're getting a little bit off here, but I do want to say that, like, for instance, I'm able to be in that space relatively comfortably, first of all, because I'm white, and most of your, you know, folks in there are white. There's, like, a class thing that is easy for me to connect with.
The high majority of them are,
Yeah, but I also did not wear my, like... my Plants Against Gender Norms shirt.
Yeah.
Like, I covered it up, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, I do think it is, like, there can be that idea that you've kind of said where it's like, oh, someone is just wearing their political identity on their sleeve all the time and they need to, like, cool off. Not that that's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there is a point where it's like, yeah, if I told somebody that I'm gender fluid and they think that I need to die...
That's an extreme.
It's going to be hard for me to get along with that person.
Yeah,
and I think,
absolutely.
Like, when it comes to those kind of, like, life or death circumstances, bridging that gap can be really hard.
Yes.
So I don't want to minimize that.
Yeah, I don't want to minimize it, but I do want to exemplify the fact that those are usually extremes. But long story short, I essentially, like, quit my job. And now I have technically three more days off a week to make content and work on my art form. And be doing glaze experiments and pottery and things of that nature. I'm on the precipice of making a new glaze.
Oh my God, I'm on the edge. Of glory.
But as far as the teaching dynamic, I think I've learned a lot more. And I'm...
Tell me.
In my age, I think I'm chilling out a little bit more. Not because my mentality has changed, but because my methodologies have changed on how I approach a situation.
Oh, tell me.
Like yesterday, I did a beginner class. And I was like... Okay, welcome to the class. Here are my rules. The first slide, you know, I do the slideshow.
Yeah, yeah.
My first slide is pull out the projector, pull the slideshow. My first one is like, my name's Dante. I was trained by this person. I've been doing pottery for this long. I've been doing this for this long. I developed glazes, XYZ, XYZ. And then I have a little list of rules for the second page. And the first and second rules are like, no religion, no politics. I do not care what political alignment you are. I do not care what religion you are. I'm not saying you can't talk about them ever, but there's the same rules as the dinner table. I don't want no arguments about this, and it's not constructive to the art world. Usually. So,
unless you are making political work,
I say usually just for the people that are going to bring up the small, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But as general dinner table rules, no. And I was like, if you bring it with you, you take it with you. I don't want to hear anybody stole my radio because I left it here overnight, XYZ, XYZ, you know? And one of them was like, we're not kids. And I was like, I get that you're not kids. I totally understand that. But if I'm being realistic with you, I don't want to treat you like you're old. And everyone in the class was like, oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, everyone was like on board with that. They were like, we want to be treated like normal human beings without age being involved.
Yes,
and I was
like,
so I'm going to treat all of you like I treat, I'm like how I used to teach college classes a long time ago when I was like a TA.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to give you the set of rules. If you need help with something physically, because realistically, you guys are no different than a normal person who's learning something. You just have some physical and maybe some mental inabilities to do some stuff.
Yeah.
That's about it. But you are not a monolith. All of you are not the same person because you're older.
Right.
You guys all have different personalities. And like everyone in that class seemed to like me saying that.
Mm.
Everyone in that class was like, we like that you're not treating us like old farts.
Yeah.
Right? And so I was like, I'm going to talk to you the same exact way that I would talk to anyone with a modicum of respect regardless of your age.
Mm-hmm.
That means that I'm not going to be sensitive to your age unless you actively ask me to do something specifically because of your age. If you need help, if you want me to get water for you, for your water bucket, for your crafting, I will, I forgot what the word is.
Accommodate?
But, yes, I will make accommodations for you. I do not mind doing that. I'm not cold-hearted. I'm not just going to be like, suck it up, do some push-ups. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, no, right? No.
But like, at the same time, I'm not going to give you special treatment because of your age. And like, across like 95% of them were like, yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes. And one of them was like, but we are different. And I was like, you guys are generationally different, but I'm not old, but I'm kind of an old head. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to see me pull up my phone 2 or 3 times in class, and it's mostly to check on my wife and daughter.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah. Like, I vibe with them on a certain level.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I have dad brain.
I think that's really cool that you actually open that up to have that conversation, too. Because I think that's, like, 100%. That's one of those dynamics that, like, if I'm going to be honest, that's not something I would have thought to bring up. Because
I have to.
Yeah. No. And I think that makes sense for you. Like,
yeah.
Because, like, how to
I've told you
like,
many times.
Yeah. Well, because my inclination in general, too, is to, like, I tend to I'm still trying to figure out if code switching is okay to use, like, not in a racial situation, because obviously I'm white and I'd be going into a room with mostly white people.
Right.
But, like, I will change my behavior based on the people that I'm around. So it's, like, I would be more inclined to try and match where they are
right.
on things and try, like how I would behave around them is probably a bit different than how I would behave around, like, college students. Potentially. Not that different, but anyway, but point being, I think it's
cool
that
you... There's a cultural dynamic, but there's not.
Right.
There's not a respect dynamic for me.
Yes.
For me, I want to make it, and I know I've told you this before, and I know this sometimes rings like, you told me before, it rings like conservative bells, and I'm like, I don't want it to, because I never mean it in this, I never mean it in a politicized or a political lens way, but I am not going to treat you based on, and I actively do not care about like, your race, your gender, your age, how you're born. I don't care. I'm going to treat you with respect until you show that your actions are no longer worthy of that respect. Mm-hmm. Like, I only care about what you do.
And I just ding, ding, ding that bell because implicit bias and unconscious bias are still a thing.
Yes, of course. But I actively try to, and I think this is a good example of it, where I'm like, I really don't care how old you are. I kind of just care how you act.
Mm-hmm.
To be real with you. And I'm going to treat you, like, if you're mean, I'm going to treat you mean. And if you're nice, I'm going to treat you nice. But your age and, like, that's what I strive for, is to treat everyone equally, regardless of how they're born. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, you guys are clearly older. I want to respect that, but I don't want to make it the whole, like, interaction and identity I have with you.
Yeah.
Our relationship should not be based on your age or your race or your gender. Like, I don't care about those things to such an extent they become your whole personality.
Right.
Right? And so they seem to enjoy that because I think they've been treated... they've been treated as if they're
like old.
Yeah. And I'm like, not really.
Yeah.
Not, I mean, yes, but also like, I don't want to. Anyway. Overall, they seem to have the same basic dynamic as like every other school setting I've ever been into.
Mm-hmm.
The veterans who are already friends who have been there for like over 2 years are sitting in their own table.
Yeah.
You know, and like the newbies sit at their own table. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And like, there is definitely, I'm not trying to make fun of anybody, there's definitely one annoying person in class that everyone's like, yeah, that's XYZ, effing irritating. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's one person who's always like, excuse me, you're wrong because, and I'm like, okay. Like, there was an instance where somebody, and this is true, I don't want to fight this. Somebody called me like a pottery snob.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next week they did the same thing I did. And I was like, hold on, you called me a pottery snob last week, but you're doing the same exact thing I just did. And she's like, it's different. I was like, no, it's not. You're being a hypocrite. And the rest of the class was like behind me.
Oh my gosh.
They were like, yeah, she does that.
Oh my god.
You know, and it's weird because like I think a lot of them, because of their age, think like we're clearly more experienced and whatnot than you. But in this dynamic, I'm the teacher and I'm usually more experienced in the clay world than they are.
Yeah.
So when I say something that they haven't experienced, some of them push back.
Mm.
And so this is where I was trying to tell you earlier, the last podcast. Yeah. I was like, I'm just going to stop pushing back. I'm just going to go, we'll see. You'll see. Either I'm right or I'm wrong and you'll see. A good example of this is we did have the conversation of like why there seems to be a certain class and type of person in the ceramic art world more often than not.
Mm.
Remember we had that conversation quite some
time
ago?
Yeah.
And people often don't like when I make this comment, but I opened it up in a more constructive way. And somebody was like, oh yeah, we're different from these people. And I was like, well, Sacramento has a different vibe. We have these conversations and they're good. I think they're constructive more so than judgmental at this point.
That's good.
Because I will say, yeah, Sacramento's a bit different. You know, Lincoln, once you get to Lincoln, you can really tell the culture difference. And she's like, what do you mean? And we had this conversation. And I was like, well, if I'm being honest with you, people who can express themselves in the ceramic art world are usually of a certain class and type because they have the availability of time, money, and space. And they've usually been at the top of the social, economic, political stratosphere for quite some time, historically speaking. Mm. So they have like the money, time, and space to just like dick around with clay and express themselves in that way. People living paycheck to paycheck or have been disenfranchised economically don't really have that as much.
Yeah.
And one of them goes, give me an example. And I said, you should go to a ceramic art convention and just look around. You'll usually see people who look similar to the dynamic of this classroom.
Yeah.
Right? And one of them goes, so where are you from? And then we had to have the conversation of, I'm not Italian.
Oh, boy.
That led into that conversation.
Oh, my God.
Because I think everyone thought because I have curly hair and my skin is not glowing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, they were like, oh, you're clearly Italian, right? Your name's Dante. And I was like, I am not Italian. I am German and black.
Yeah.
And then they were all like, what? But you have the skin. And I was, I was like, I know, genetics are crazy. You know, and then it dawned on me like, oh, if I was, I probably wouldn't be here if that were the case. You know what I mean? Like,
oh,
there's, like, there's a lower chance than not that I would have.
Like if you were more visibly black, like yes. If your skin was darker.
Right. Like yeah. The clay, I don't think the clay rolled would have accepted me as much, but that's a stretch, but like I still think there's a possibility. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean it's you would have okay, it seems like you would have dealt with more pushback, more racism in general, because it's like, again, colorism is a thing, like
100%. Yeah, the implicit bias that you speak of, people have regardless of whether they think they have it or not usually. Yeah, and yeah. Even we have it to some extent.
Oh yeah.
But that being said, like, the guy with an American flag photo would not leave nice comments on my YouTube channel 100% of the time.
Mm.
Anyway, I'm reaching. But I'm trying to be more constructive. But it's cool because when I first got there, I have a very specific way of teaching where I pull out a PowerPoint presentation and I kind of profess to them, for lack of a better term, and I tell them, like, this is what this is, XYZ, XYZ, yeah. And I...
Cool question, actually. Where did you get that projector? Because I thought that was really...
I bought it on Shmamizon.
What? Oh, Shmamizon.
Yeah, it was a hundo. And then I have to buy the thing separately. It's not that bad. It works really well, and you can pop in a USB.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah, so it's basically, it's like a portable projector and projector screen.
Yes.
And I thought that it was really good that you had that, also because sometimes relying on a particular school's or institution's technology could be,
I just don't trust it.
Yeah. So it's good. Yeah. So that's as a teaching sort of technique. That's good that you had that.
I took it out. I thought you were going to be impressed because you've never seen it before. And I took it out and I thought you were going to be like, what the hell is that? But the projector's nice. I like the projector. So I create classes in PowerPoint.
I'm sorry I didn't meet your expectations.
You weren't as impressed as I thought you'd be.
I'm so sorry. Well, because it's like, I was like, oh, yeah, portable projector. Like, I've seen things like that before, but I just,
right.
I honestly, also, at first, I assumed that it was the school's.
No.
So.
It's mine. I carry it around.
Yeah, that's good. It's good.
But what I usually do is I have a projector, I put it up, and then the last class, we had a talk about the anatomy of pots and how it relates to the historical significance of certain pots fitting certain styles and profiles.
Mm.
And that's a long sentence, but essentially the class was, what is this? And they went, that's the Grecian amphora vase.
Mm-hmm.
One of the history buffs. Because they used to be like, you know what I mean? Like history teachers and engineers and stuff before they retired here. And I go, great, how do you know that? And she goes, it just looks like that. And then I went to the second slide and I was like, here's where we talk about the anatomy of a pot and a profile. Here's the top, here's the lip, here's the shoulder, here's the body, and certain profiles and certain spaces anatomically on a pot look different based on the culture in which you use them usually.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the Greeks love to hold stuff in their pots, more famously serve wine in their pots, and they hold wine in their pots, so they have a lot of like handled pots. And then we went to like Korea, and I was like, Korean don't really have those that much. They don't have a lot of handles. They might have wine vases. And so we talked about that.
Oh, cool.
And afterwards, I got some really good feedback. She was like, I've never even thought of that.
Mm.
The reason why my brain relates that shape to Greece without even thinking about the reasons why it relates to Greece.
Yeah. Oh, and I love that.
I'm learning slowly that they got taught away. This might be a generational thing. I'm not sure. They got taught away and then they never explored a secondary way how to do things.
Mm.
Like, here's a good example. They call stroke and coat, the Mako glaze, different stuff instead of glaze. I call stroke and coat glaze, glaze. Some of them call it low fire glaze because it can be fired at low fire.
Huh.
Some of them call it high fire glaze because it can go up to like cone 6 or 7.
Huh.
Some of them call it mid fire glaze because it goes to 5 and 6. Struck and Code is very, it's just like glass mineral color.
Yeah.
It's almost like mason stains or underglaze with a little bit of glass in it.
Interesting.
And because of that, you can erase that extra step, right? But a lot of them also think it's underglaze. And I'm like, that's not, technically it's not underglaze.
Right.
Because it has glass in it.
Right.
Underglaze usually doesn't have a lot of glass in it to the point where it sticks to anything.
Yeah.
So I brought in last week a bottle of underglaze.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, what is that?
Oh.
What is that?
They didn't know about underglaze?
Two or three of them knew. The rest of them who have been taught to use Struck and Coat have never known another world outside of it.
Oh, okay, okay.
Right? Yeah, and so two or three of them were like, yeah, I use underglaze and then I put an overglaze on it. You know, so I had to then explain the cone system. And like, mm-hmm. I was like, this is 06. And we have the chart of the Stroke and Coat. This is not a commercial for them. We had a chart for Stroke and Coat. We had like a, here it is fired at 06. And they have a secondary chart. Here it is fired at cone 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to explain to them, these are the same glazes fired at different temperatures of Stroke and Coat.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And some of them were like, I didn't know that. And I was like, how long has this been here? And they're like, 5-6 years.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, no one told you that? And they go, no. And I said, it says it right here. And they're like, we didn't read it.
Yeah.
Or another problem is that they find the little pottery tricks that work in the ceramic art world. Like, technically speaking, you could put low fire glazes into a high fire sometimes, mm-hmm. 5-6,
mm-hmm.
Which is technically mid fire, but whatever. And it works sometimes, but it doesn't always work because it's not developed to work at those cones.
Right.
So some of them are like, it worked last time. And I'm like, what does the bottle say? And they're like, it doesn't matter. It worked. Mm. And I'm like, the instructions are kind of important, guys.
Yeah.
This says low fire glaze on it, and you put it in the high fire, which means you probably overfire. One of them fired.
Which, I mean, it doesn't mean you can't, because you had that whole talk about how,
yes,
you, like, low fire glazes are not, like, the whole cones aren't real thing.
Yes, you know? Yes, yes.
So it's like,
I went through the cones not are not real phase because Mako makes glazes that survive from, like 4 to 10. And like, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the same, anyway, whatever. It's the same glaze, too, which freaks me out. I still haven't gotten a straight answer on that. Like, why does your glaze have such a... Anyway, they don't know these little bits of information. They know the tricks. Only the tricks. You know what I mean? Like, none of them use Giffen grips.
Oh.
But, like, a few of them know how to tap center, but they don't know how to center.
Oh, like center when they're, like, throwing on the wheel? Or, like, or centering as in, like, when you're trimming?
And when you're trimming. Which is crazy to me. Right?
How do you...
Right?
I mean,
it's confusing because it's so they don't know a lot of some of them, I'm not saying all of them, but some of them don't know like the base knowledge of something. They just know the after effects.
I got you.
It was clear the teacher taught them like the speedy way to do stuff.
Yeah.
But then like they never learned. Like I explained what glaze is made out of one day and they were like, so it's just minerals floating in water? And I was like, yeah. Did no one ever tell you that? And they're like, why is it so goopy? I'm like, it's usually a gum solution. They're like, what is that? And I'm like, it's another thing.
Yeah.
It's another powder that goes in a glaze that makes it.
Yeah, that's actually, that makes a lot of sense. Because I feel like in general, that's how most, okay, this is a broad generalization. But I feel like that's, at least that's my experience with how I was taught ceramics, is that they teach you how to do things, but not why those things happen. Or, like, the underlying rules behind them. And it low-key reminds me of how I learned math. In school, because when it got to a certain point, like, I mean, I was okay in math. Like, I always got, like, A's and B's until I got to pre-calc. And then I was like, ooh, B minus, real close to a C. Not good. But point being, it's like, this is maybe not the best metaphor, but it's like, I could kind of solve problems, but I didn't understand the baseline rules of, like, why we solve problems this way.
Right, no one ever told you the base.
Right, yeah, or they did, but I just didn't understand it. So it's like, I feel like with ceramics, like, we often get taught, like, okay, here's how to throw, here's how to glaze, here, it's like, how to do all the things, but that's why so many of us go so long before we learn, like, how to make a glaze.
Right.
Or how to load a kiln. It's like, it's that technical side of ceramics that often doesn't get as, you don't go into it as much because...
I go into it and they're like... And it like, here's another one, right? And I don't know if you experienced this. You had one, but you didn't experience the base one. I did a presentation of how clay dries
mm-hmm.
and the variables. I just did a YouTube video on this as well. Of the variables that mainly dictate how fast your clay dries.
Yes.
Right? And I don't know if you were there for
that. Yeah, I was there for that.
Okay. before that presentation, I made it because they were wrapping their work up with, like, Target bags.
Oh, no.
And Walmart bags. And they were like, why is my clay drying so fast? And I was like, there's air holes in your clay, clearly.
Yeah.
And they were like, why are there air holes? I covered it with a bag. And I was like, it's not very good plastic. Mm-hmm. It's number one, it's porous. It's made more for strength than anything else. And number two, you're just setting it, like...
It's like it's kind of like lightly draped over as opposed to like actually
yeah,
like
it's tucked not, under. It's yeah. not made of quality plastic that would form over the pot to make sure that it's an enclosed kind of little dome of moisture.
Yeah, it's a stiff plastic.
It's a stiff plastic. And so they were like, but the past teacher just said to cover it with plastic. And I was like, but he never told you the reason why we cover it with plastic, nor did he tell you how things dry out properly, did they? And they were like, no. Mm. And I was like, okay, so I got to do a class. Yeah. And then sometimes I get pushback. Where they're just like, well, last week I let my stuff air dry and it was good for like 3 days. And I was like, right, well, we had a thunderstorm last week, which means there's more moisture in the air, which means that if there's more moisture in the air, your stuff's going to dry slower because it doesn't evaporate out of the pores of your clay as much. Mm-hmm. And they were like, no, I don't like that. That's too much. No, that's too many words. Mm. And I was like, look, the drier the air is, the faster the water comes out of your clay. And usually things when hot are also dry, usually. Mm-hmm. Unless you're in a very specific place.
Unless you're dealing with, like, humidity.
I was in Japan for a while, and in their summers it rains, so all their pottery stays during the summer. But we live in California, so it doesn't happen like that.
Because it's dry as balls here.
Dry as hell. And I said, if you threw a pot in 110 degrees, you will notice that if you put it outside, it'll dry in, like, the course of 2 or 3 hours. In the winter, especially when it's raining, it takes days. Mm-hmm. Right? And they're like, oh, okay. So from this point on, everyone just started throwing away, like, Target and Walmart bags. Because they were like, oh, this is why it's not working. And it really helps that they seem to be, some of them are like, I guess what you would say, old school smart. Because 2 or 3 of them are like, yeah, I noticed that I recycle all of the clay that you guys don't use in there. I put it in water and then I recycle it because I watched Dante's YouTube video on recycling clay. And most of the ones that are super dry to the point where they're just dead are wrapped up with this super stiff plastic. Mm. And not the garbage bags that Dante bought for us.
Yeah.
And I was like, start using the garbage bags. Mm-hmm. Right? And stuff like that, where like someone told them to use plastic to cover their stuff, but no one told them how.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. And I think that's my biggest thing that I've learned in teaching, is that like I really have to teach the base of why things happen.
Yeah.
Instead of just telling them to do a thing and it'll be fine. Because the context of why we do the thing and how it's done and how it's done to your benefit are lost in that translation.
Yeah, yeah. Are you focused on, like, because I'm curious, because again, you know, everyone has their different, like, teaching style and stuff, and you seem to bring in small aspects of history. Are you, in terms of that knowledge, are you primarily focused on the formal qualities of things, or, because it seems like you're mostly talking about, like, the formal qualities, like technique, the anatomy of a pot, like you're talking about. And then you bring in some history talking about, like, this is what makes an amphora. This is what makes a moon jar. You know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
So how do you decide what aspect to focus on?
So the only reason I teach those things is because I believe at a base, it scaffolds on each other. So that's more of like a later thing that I want to talk about. Like, for example, I made, don't ask for this. I'm going to tell you right now, don't ask for this. I made a YouTube video on what creates profile and form, why pots look more elegant in the mind than they do more stout or beefy, even though they might be light in general, right? Yeah. And how the brain relates to shapes. Like why you would call a fork Kiki and a spoon Bob.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Stuff like that. But to be blunt, we're just not there yet. Uh-huh. Because when I got to class, they're like, I'm using the wrong plastic. So I'm interested in those aspects.
Yeah.
But that's a pipe dream.
Gotcha. Okay.
Like, if I make a cylinder versus when I put this little thing right here in the cylinder, this is, and I'm pointing to a cup right now for Lindsay, this is multifunctional, right? This helps fit into your cup holders and make it more stable. Mm-hmm. It also technically makes the thing look a little more lifted.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it's in a taller V shape, right?
Yeah.
And these two are a bit different in that form, right? I don't want to explain this to them that yet. Because they're still learning how to wrap up their pots in plastic.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, this month we're doing bubble glaze. And it's because I think it's exciting and it helps us develop plates.
Yeah. Oh, okay, okay. Right?
One of them really wants to do bubble glaze. And I was like, you know what? Bubble glaze is super easy. Mm-hmm. Everyone seems to like it online. I see it all the time. So we'll do it. Yeah. We'll do it. It's very, very easy. And so I told them all, this month I want all of you to make 3 plates. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I have found in teaching is that I don't want to force anyone to do my lesson plans.
Yeah.
But I have to be very strict on, like, I'm not making a lesson plan just for you.
Right.
There's one person who's like, I want to do dragons. And I go, cool.
Yeah, dragons.
Yeah. I said, do you not want to follow the lesson plan of the bubble glaze this much? She goes, no, I just want to do my own thing, do dragons. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, have fun doing your dragons. Ask me if you need any help. And then I went off my own. And she just kind of sat there waiting for me to teach her how to make a dragon. And after a good 10 minutes or so, she's like, well, what do I glaze this? And I go, I don't know, whatever you want. Mm. Right? And she's like, well, I want to make a dragon. I was like, go ahead, make a dragon. Mm. You know, and I have to be very like, I've created a lesson plan for you. If you don't want to follow it, that is your business. It's your money. You paid for the class. I'm not going to force you to do anything, but I'm not going to accommodate an entirely new project just for you. Because if everyone does that, the class will go to mayhem.
Yeah.
Right? You can't be the exception because everyone thinks they're the exception after a certain point. That's one facet that I have learned that I don't like that much. Mm. Not that they do it, but that I can't. I just can't do that for everyone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Another thing, I have to respect their time. And that whenever I do a presentation, I go, if you've already seen this presentation from another class, because I switch classes sometimes, please ignore me. Go off, do your own thing.
Yeah.
You do not have to. If you want to learn from this, if you want to take notes, please do. Yeah, I make this generalized rule of like, if you want to do your own thing, please do your own thing. Mm-hmm. I will not bug you, but do not expect me to make a whole lesson plan just for what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that makes a lot of sense.
I think it's fair, to be honest. Because I'm willing to give you the skills to represent your own artwork and express yourself. I'm willing to give you the hammer. I'm not going to hammer the nail for you. I'm not going to tell you what to glaze your stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell you how to represent yourself as far as style goes. But if you want to make a styled glazed plate, I'm going to show you how to make a plate for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like the second that you're like, I want to make a blue plate, do it for me. I'm like, no. No, I'm not going to take you step by step on how to make a blue plate the way I would make one. This is not Dante art time. This is you art time. Mm-hmm. This is for you. My job is to teach you. My job is to give you the tools to build a house that you would live in for yourself in the style that you would like it in to express yourself. It is not to build the house for you. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you would all live in apartments.
Yeah.
And it would all look the same. Be ticky-tacky. You won't like it.
Yeah, there definitely is, I feel like, because, I mean, obviously I've taught less than you, but one thing I noticed when I was a TA for Marcia Schindler years ago, there definitely is a skill in helping people
help themselves.
Helping people help themselves. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because it's like, because again, you know, I mean, especially if you're new to art and you're new to, you know, if you're new to all of this.
Yes.
You might just not know and I think I mentioned this again on our Night Peddlers episode, but like the idea of having like a question thought tree where it's like, okay, how do I help you set up for yourself the questions to ask yourself so that you can figure out your own answer?
Yeah, because I don't want to give you the answer.
Yeah,
it takes away the struggle.
Yeah, yeah.
And struggle builds character.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
To a degree, yeah.
Well, also there's a sense of like, you know, someone could be like, hey, how do I glaze this? Yeah. And it's kind of like, okay, well, you know, how do you want to glaze it? Like, and again, this is less in a kind of situation where like someone is doing their own thing separate from the main lecture. Cause I think it does make sense to like not try and accommodate everyone, you know, because again, things could go to chaos, but like in like, if there was a situation where, you know, as part of the kind of group assignment, someone was like, oh, okay, like, how do I glaze this? Then it's like, okay, how do you help them ask the question of like, okay, do I want to make this representational or do I want to make it like stylized? And also knowing what those two words mean.
Right.
And having some context for that and go, okay, like, do you want to do crazy bright colors? Do you want to do dark muted colors? And, or figuring out, like, I don't know. But I mean, again, all those things take time.
Right.
And I feel like that's one of the things that I enjoy the most when I think about like what teaching could bring people is like figuring out how to answer those things for yourself.
100%. Right now, we're just kind of going over the things that are common sense to us.
Yeah.
Like, if I buy an Amoco Celadon, they have different hues of the same glaze. So they have, like, a green, and then they have a darker Celadon green, then they have, like, a darker Celadon green. But you and I both know, relatively, that it's basically a base glaze with certain colorants in it, and then the next version of it that's darker green has a higher percentage of those same colorants. Right? So some of them are like, I bought Amoco Celadon. They're three different glazes, but they really showed up with the same glaze in three different hues.
Yeah.
So they showed up with three greens and one's just a darker green. And so they're like, what happens if I mix these two? And I'm like, it's just going to turn out green.
Yeah.
You bought the same glaze three times really, but they have no idea.
Right.
So a lot of the experience that I have just from moving in the ceramic art world is not lost on them, but they just haven't acquired it yet.
Yeah.
So realistically, they bought two bottles of glazes that they're just like, I don't need these. And I'm like, didn't you want to mix glazes? And they're like, yeah, but you just told me I basically bought the same color but darker three times. And I'm like, you did.
Yeah.
You really did. Or they'll be like, is this high fire? It says it on the bottle. And I'm like, read the bottle. Yeah. You know? I try and be nice about it.
Yeah.
But I'm like, just read the bottle. Read on the back. It'll tell you what cone it is. And they go, this one says 5-6. What does that mean? And I'm like, that's usually higher fire.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't call it high fire, but it's higher than low fire.
Mm-hmm.
They go, so it's high fire. And I go, for our purposes, it is high fire. Yes.
Yeah.
It is not low fire. So when you put it on the shelf, put it on the high fire shelf. They go, okay. They still have trouble conceptualizing 0-6 versus 6.
Yeah.
And so I'm cementing that right now. So to your previous question of like, are you interested? I'm interested in those facets. We're not there yet.
Yeah.
We're not going to go there yet.
I hear that.
Yeah. And I love them so much because some of them are professionals in their fields.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, like one of them, I think you were there for it, is a mathematician.
Yes.
And I was talking about how when you make a glaze recipe, because one of them was like, I want to see your glaze recipe so bad.
Oh, yeah.
I think you were there for it. And it said, okay, like, here's 100%, and then you go over that and you add the colorants. And he goes, excuse me, you can't have more than 100% of anything. And I was like, in the ceramic art world, in the glaze world, we do. We have 100%, and that's what makes the base glaze.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it is generally, I say generally because this is not true, just colorants and oxides and carbonates. They're just the color of the glaze. And he goes, and that goes to, and I said, it could go to, like, 111%. And he was like, that's more than 100%. That doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And like he explained to me later, he's like, I'm a mathematician. I know.
Yeah.
And I was like, right, but we're not in the math world. We're in the ceramic art world. And for the ceramic art world, when you go on glazing and digital fire and whatnot, and they give you recipes, the glaze itself without the color is generally 100% of the glaze because it's a glaze at that point.
Yeah.
The color, which is what you guys are really interested in, is over 100%. And he goes, I just disagree. I just disagree. And I was like, you don't really have to agree with it. It's just kind of true for us.
Yeah.
It is whether you like it or not.
Yeah. Well, because it's like language is dependent on the situation a lot of the times.
Right. And we went through it. I was like, in order to make this part of the 100%, you would have to lessen these percentages. But since 1% equals 1 gram, usually, unless you're making multiple batches, you would have to say 1 equals like 0.7 instead. And he goes, well, why would you do that? That's an extra step. And I was like, yeah, and it's difficult and I don't want to do that. So most of us just put 100%. And we argued over it a little bit.
Yeah.
And he was like, there's no such thing as over 100%. I need you to say that. And I was like, okay, 200%. And he goes, that's just 100% twice. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but that is more than 100%, isn't it? It's twice of what 100% is.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, no, it's 100% twice. And then I was like, okay, what's 160%? He goes, that's 60 more than 100, but it's a whole new fat. And I was like, you're stressed out over this thing that doesn't matter. I don't know how to explain this to you, but I promise you in the ceramic art field, our glazes are 100%,
mm-hmm.
and then the colors are usually over that amount.
Yeah.
Or anything extra is over that amount, because at 100%, it is a glaze. Mm-hmm. It is considered a complete glaze.
Yeah.
You guys just like the color, unless you wanted everything to be relatively clear and white,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, whatever in white. So I think that's the only thing that I struggle with in the class, is trying to indoctrinate them into the clay world. You know, they have questions like, what does RIO mean? And I'm like, it's red iron oxide. And they go,
hey, I remember asking that question.
Yeah. And then,
what, like, is Rio?
Yeah. And they're like, what is red iron oxide? And I goes, it's oxide wash, pretty much. You know, you mix the red powder with the oxide, with water to make oxide wash, red oxide wash. And they're like, yeah. And I was like, okay, the red powder is red iron oxide. It's red. It's iron oxide.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, it like blew their mind.
Mm.
But they've been using it for years.
Yeah.
Just no one's ever told them that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I'm struggling with at the moment. Is that I'm trying to teach them the base knowledge to the things they already do.
Yeah.
And usually it doesn't go this way. Usually I get beginners who are like, I don't know anything, so I teach them from the base.
Yeah.
But the pushback I get is usually like, nah. And I'm like, well, let me explain to you why you...
Oh, that's interesting. Know? So it's kind of like that thing, if this is a correct parallel. It's like when people talk about if someone has learned enough of an instrument to play, but they're not using the proper technique.
Yes.
Then... And again, with ceramics,
proper technique.
Yeah, with ceramics, obviously, you know, there's many different ways to get the same thing, but in terms of like, but there are more efficient ways or like better ways to like do a certain thing.
Yeah.
And yeah. Okay. I think I get what you're saying.
I think a more apt example is that, like, have you ever met a guitarist who doesn't know how to read music?
Oh, yeah.
It's like that, where like they're already at the stage where they're like guitaring, but they don't I'm like, this is an E and this is an F, and they're like, I don't know how to read music.
Gotcha.
And I'm like, why are you playing the guitar if you don't know how to read music? And they're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm like, you could probably play better if you knew how to read music.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, me doing this 3 notes, the Stairway to Heaven song for the past 5 years has worked for me. And I'm like, I'm telling you, you could play a bunch of different music if you knew how to read the notes.
Yeah.
I'm telling you that.
But I mean, it's fair. Maybe someone just wants to read the one
thing. It's fair, but what often happens, and this is where I started the conversation earlier, where I was like, I'm just going to let them do what they do and they'll learn by themselves, is that some of them take my advice and they end up doing these things that mm-hmm. they're like, I got 3 more inches on my cylinder from doing mm-hmm. this one thing Dante told me to do. And so Stairway to Heaven doesn't look so good when someone else is playing a different, you know what I mean? Like, we've all been playing Stairway to Heaven forever. Mm. And all of a sudden, Susan is playing a whole different song. How is she doing that? And she's like, well, Dante taught me how to read this one note. And now they're like, oh, we should listen to him a little bit.
You know? Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
And so that's kind of where I am, where I'm like, hey, man, I'm not going to force you to do anything. You do what you want to do. But if you see some stuff that someone else is doing that I taught them, maybe give me a holler. Mm-hmm. Maybe give me a chance.
Yeah.
Finger guns.
Yeah.
Dad, my dad finger guns.
Dad finger guns, yeah.
I have these now.
That's cool.
Sorry, I talked a lot. I'm done now.
No, it's good. That's good. No, it's good. It's a solid teaching update to what is your newfound well-paying job.
Yeah, but I quit my other job.
I'm so happy for you, dude.
They're mad. They're not mad, but they're like, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, there's 4 people who hold that place together.
Yeah.
And I was one of them.
Yep.
And even on the days that I'm there, sometimes we struggle because we're understaffed. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, crap, we're losing Dante. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you got to hire more people. And the bosses are trying, but it's hard.
Yeah.
It's not nobody wants to work anymore.
Of course not.
It's just like, somebody will sign up for the job and then just not come in.
Yeah.
And we're like, we don't know what's going on in your life, but you should have showed up to keep the job.
Yeah.
Is there anything else we should talk about?
That was amazing. I don't think so. I mean, I think we're at 50 minutes.
Oh my God, I talked too much.
Well, dear listeners, if you have any questions for us about teaching, about, you know, what it's like, how Dante got into this position or things like that, send us messages and then we will answer them. We will answer them. So, I don't know. Say something profound.
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 The emptiest barrels make the most noise. Remember that when that man's shouting in your ear next time.
Why are men shouting in your ear?
Because they're empty inside.
Aw. Okay. All right, we'll see you next time. Bye. And that's it for today. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of The Mud Peddlers. We would love to hear from you, so if you want to share your thoughts about the episodes or just see what Dante and I are working on in our studios, come say hi. You can find links to my social media at lindseymdillon.com. That's LINDSEY, M as in monster, DILLON.com.
And you can visit my pottery shop or see what I'm working on at earthnationceramics.com. And you can find me all over social media at earthnationceramics. It's spelled exactly how you think it's spelled.
And if you want to support the show, hear some bonus episodes, and see some behind the scenes of my work, you can support me and the show at patreon.com/lindseymdillon. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.